Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we go to the Western Conference. We look at seeds 3 through 6 to talk about how good they are, some of the weaknesses. Are those weaknesses actually fatal flaws, or are those things that they got to kind of work through? We talk through those. We then get into Unrivaled. The playoff field is set. The playoff seeding isn't quite set yet. Fun matchups there. Angel Reese is back. Rekia Jackson is back. And then, as I have an Unrivaled Awards ballot, we talk a little bit about MVP. Those votes are due later today. We talk through some of my top candidates and ultimately where I am leaning heading into the week. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve! New week, more hoops. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. I am really ready to talk about some hoops because we are post All-Star break. This is one of the more fun stretches of the season, and I cannot wait to kind of dive into some different topics with you, Nikias Earl Grey Duncan.
Earl Grey is insane, but let's talk some hoops indeed. And let's start with the Western Conference because, buddy, I feel like we have said 27 different variations of, man, these standings sure are jumbled. And now we're in the post-All-Star break stretch. As you mentioned, it's kind of a sprint to the playoffs right now. And this is where the seeding is obviously going to matter. That's going to set up your playoff matchups, potential play-in matchups, which then flows into playoff matchups. You kind of have the baselines of what these teams are. It is now trying to refine a little bit. Let's test out some other things when we have these premier matchups. Okay, let's get a little game plan specific. Let's do some specific things to see how it works, see what doesn't. Teams are trying to put teams in a box. It's been a lot of fun navigating this early post All-Star break stretch. What stood out to you so far,
Steve? Well, let's pause. Let's pause real quick. We don't have to sprint today. We could pause real quick. Uh-huh. The post All-Star run, the post All-Star break hoops, the sprint that happens is very fun because it's identity against identity. And we're going to laser in on the Western Conference because I've had some thoughts, but teams are starting to game plan more. It's not just about how good you are as a basketball team. It's about how do you sustain that over the course of 48 minutes. The team that's trying to put you in a box and you have to work your way out of it. It's a little preamble to the playoffs where, and you're going to, I've said this before and I'll say it again, you're going to have to be in a position where you have to problem solve in the playoffs. It's not just about how good your team is. It's not just about how good your great is. It's about, can you figure out how to get back to it when a team's trying to put you in a box? And we've seen that kind of over the course of some of these matchups, not even just constrained to the Western Conference. Like, we've seen Cleveland and OKC, or Oklahoma City puts Cleveland in a box for a little bit, and Cleveland has to kind of workshop their way out of it and figure out, okay, how do we handle this type of matchup and how we find a way to contribute on both ends of the floor. This is the fun this season. And I think this is where you have these moments where, okay, we've seen Cleveland be really good with James Harden. We've seen Jared Allen perform pretty well with James Harden. Okay, it's not just switching that's going to hurt us. It's, Oklahoma City is a team that's going to help on every drive. If we take quick shots, we're in trouble. If we turn the ball over, we're in trouble. They push on the other end, we're in trouble. What do we do with that? And, you know, after the initial run, I think they acquitted themselves pretty okay, but they got hit pretty early. Mm-hmm. You have a Boston who has their identity and they're set in who they are. And okay, we can do different things to you defensively. And then when we get stops, we can get out and run. San Antonio and Detroit was a phenomenal matchup in the sense that, yes, San Antonio, and I know you're going to talk about the Spurs, but they've been so poised over, I think, the last 2-3 weeks. They've been so, played with so much composure as far as understanding who they are and the belief they have in themselves. In Detroit, they're a physical defense. We're going to get after you. We're going to put hands on you. We're going to figure it out. So San Antonio has a great start. Detroit gets physical. They get back in the game. And now it's a different ball game. San Antonio eventually wins. But, like, that's the fun of this moment for me. And I know a lot of people are in a tizzy with their teams. I'll put it that way. But what I would say is, right, and as we kind of circle back to the Western Conference, I've been thinking about the four teams and honestly the top six, because OKC has been tremendous. I think Mark Dadenault has literally looked at the injury report. And you know how, like, people look at their lawns on, like, a Sunday morning with, like, a cup of coffee and they do, like, an exhale? I feel like Mark Dadnall has done that with the injury report for the last 2 weeks. It's like, finally, some adversity. Let's coach through this. So they've separated themselves. I mean, casually adding Jerry McCain and having three guard lineups and having their two bigs. Like, they just are a very good team. And they have figured things out. San Antonio, we've talked about them. We'll talk about them in a little bit. They've been very good. The Houston, Denver, Lakers, Timberwolves little clump right there gets very interesting. And I've been sitting on this, Nikias. I've been sitting on this for like 2-3 days trying to figure out, what do I do with this? Because if you're Denver, you're saying, hey, we've had a pretty good season. We're just trying to get healthy. We're in a good spot. How good of a spot are they truly in? What do you do with that? The Lakers, they're sitting there saying, hey, we haven't played our best basketball. We're just trying to get healthy, get our top three players on the court. We're in a good spot. How good of a spot are they truly in? What do you do with that? If you're Houston, no one believes in you. I'm not going to do the Michael Irvin meme, but no one believes in you. They think you can't score in the clutch. You're a very good defense. And you look up, and they are the three seed as we talk through this. They are the three seed.
They've gotten back to the three seed, yeah.
What do you do with that? And Minnesota, everyone knows what they can do. But they play certain teams. Remember early in the season when all they could beat was like the sub 500 teams? And now we're later in the season and they can't beat the sub 500 teams. It's a very odd dynamic. It's just, there's a lot of shifting going on. But my thing, Nikias, is like two of these teams are going home early. Two of these teams will advance. And like I made a tweet over the weekend thinking about exactly what they're going to do. And like this quadrant of teams, and like the reactions at first were one way. It's like, why are you talking about Houston? The Lakers can't defend. Da, da, da. And then every single one of those teams lost, and all their fan bases were upset. And it was just very funny to kind of rectify. Yeah, this is where we're at. Two of these teams are going to advance. Two are going home. What do we do? So that's where I've been at, and that's my starting point. You know what I mean?
No, I like that, and it's funny. Like, you've been sitting on this and getting into deep thought. I feel like I've just been kind of sprinkling in. Hey, Minnesota, I see you. What's going on here? We're going to talk about y'all in a little bit if you don't shape this up, but I see you. Hey, Houston, this offense. Hey, what's going on here? I see you. We're going to talk about you in a little bit. We end up doing a deep dive on them shortly after. But it's like, hey, I see y'all. Y'all are good, but also the Lakers with the defense. This is a lot more zone. This is interesting. You're trying to tap into some scheme versatility. Hey, Steve, they finally started. One, they finally had their big three together. They played 192 minutes together this year, which is just not a lot. You start Marcus Smart and DeAndre Ayton with those three. It's like, oh, okay, we're finally getting a little offense-defense balance to see what this looks like. They beat the Clippers, and they're sending all kinds of double teams towards Kawhi. It's like, okay, this is interesting. Then they face the Celtics, and no. We'll just say very quickly, no. And this is where it hit up if you're a Laker fan. Like, hey, can we finally beat like a really good team? I would like to see this. I feel better about what the ceiling can be. And so, like, it's been fascinating keeping track of these four in particular. Like, which team would you want to start with? I have thoughts about all these, and I know you have deeper thoughts about all four of these. Where would you want to begin with this group?
Well, I'll get back to you in 2 seconds. But I think one of the parts about this part of the season, right? I think it becomes easy to think about a team's fatal flaw, right? What's the one thing that they can't do well? What's the one thing that's going to knock them out of the playoffs? And so when we talk about these teams, I kind of want to try and figure out, do they have one? Which one is it? But how much of like their struggles right now are we can't do X, or we just don't have margin for error for certain things, right? So if you're Denver, defensively, we can't afford bad transition defense, not being able to keep the ball in front, not being able to contain cutters. That puts us in a box, right? For the Lakers, is our fatal flaw, everyone's going to point and say, you know, it's defense. They can't guard anybody and they'll walk away. Okay, but how much of that is, what happens on the nights when our offense isn't A+? And how does that tie together, right? If it's Houston, everyone's talking about their clutch offense and what do they do in late games. I saw there was some tweet, it was just like, Ime Udoka, they've lost X amount of games in the fourth quarter when they have a lead. That's a cool stat if you're mad, but like they won 42 games in 2 years before he came. Like they're still learning how to win. I know they accelerated the rebuild with Kevin Durant, but they're still trying to figure things out. So is it because they can't execute in the fourth quarter? Does that take away from their defense? Like, how does that tie together? And then does Minnesota even have a fatal flaw? Or is it just effort? Is this something that's a regular season deal, or is this a playoff concern? Like I feel like it comes down to the little things when it comes to these teams. What can you live with? You know, game plans are going to increase on both sides, and you have to figure out how to get back to who you are. And do these four teams know what they do well? Do these four teams know what they don't do well? Can they disguise it enough to get to the good is where my brain kind of goes to, you know? So I'll probably, let's start with Houston, because we've already talked about Houston. Okay. They're the three seed. Let's give them their respect. I think with the Rockets, it becomes very interesting because there's different things that they're trying to figure out at the same time. I think that they are a very, very, very good defensive team, right? And I think that should elevate come playoff time. Offensively, they are methodical. They play a little bit slower than they should, more times than not, and they're trying to figure out that aspect of it. And so which part do we kind of point to with this Houston Rockets team? And how much is dependent on Alperen Şengün making more plays? How much is it dependent on Amen Thompson making more plays, especially when it comes to like the clutch, to where I think they have a flow when they get stops, they push, they run, they can play, they can get you, like they can blow you out the gym. They can compete with almost everyone. But when it comes to those tough scenarios, it can't just be Kevin Durant, you know, and especially we saw in that Knicks game, right? And this is something you probably would have never said before this weekend. Hey, yeah, we're good with Landry Shamet on Kevin Durant, right? You would have never said that.
No, can't say that.
Exactly. That's the matchup Houston chose to attack. He didn't make the shots. But now it's okay. Does Amen know when he has to be aggressive, when he should get the ball to KD? Alperen Şengün, a lot of this depends on teams sending more help towards him. If they're just going to stay at home, what are you opening up with his drives? If he's going to hold the ball and try to attack from the three-point line, I like that in theory. But if everyone else is staying home and now it's one-on-one and you're not scoring, what have you opened up? Are you consistently putting pressure on teams in those moments? I think it's a learning experience, right? I think one thing that we don't really take into consideration, last year, Jalen Green, Fred VanVleet, Dylan Brooks were a lot more involved in fourth quarter offense than we gave them credit for. Mm-hmm. And those three have just transformed into Kevin Durant. And now it's Alperen Şengün, do more, and Amen Thompson, do a lot more. And so how do you balance that out? Because they have to learn what to do in these scenarios. And so do you feel like there's growth in that process? Do you feel like they can do more in these scenarios? Or do you feel like this is just kind of it for them?
I think there is room for them to do more and ultimately be more. I guess just to kind of zoom out, set the table, if we're talking about the clutch offense for Houston, they're 14-16 in clutch games as of recording. They are 22nd in clutch offensive rating right now. Again, clutch stuff, you're always dealing with smaller samples, so grain of salt, you already kind of baked in, but that is where they are as we record this. And so I think to your overall point, I think there is just room, as boring as the analysis may be, there is just room for Alperen Şengün to play better than he has been over the last 2-3 weeks. But we have seen him play at an all-star level. He was a participant of All-Star Weekend for a reason. He has been good overall this season. I do think some of the finishing stuff has perked up once again. That was one of the things that kind of had me down the season last year. I thought he was good, but you kind of have to make your layups, as simplistic as this sounds. And I think this year, to your point about teams showing less help, a lot of that is because, like, Alperen Şengün is a good passer, so you don't want to open things up for him. But it's also like, no, let's force him to finish over length. Like, he has the weird cadence. He finds weird angles and stuff. But if he's not making those at a high enough clip, we don't have to be in rotation. And so when you have that baked in with some of the surrounding talent that teams aren't afraid of from the perimeter, it makes it a little bit easier to kind of stay home. We can now commit more bodies to the glass to make sure Houston isn't killing us on the offensive glass like they were earlier in the year. We get to run. The quieter thing for me is I look at like the clutch stats and stuff. Like, no, the offense isn't good. The defense kind of falls off a cliff during clutch time. And I wonder how much of that is the transition slash just early offense stuff that they're dealing with after not getting something good on the offensive end. So as you talk about, you know, more so with the Lakers, but with Houston as well, like how much of the offense is bleeding into the defense getting hit? And in opportunity, like, I think that's where you get that. And so, like, I think there's room for Şengün to play better. I think this is where some of the, more so earlier in games, but this is where some of the early Jabari Smith Jr. usage is interesting to me. Like, can we get him more involved? He is a guy that can knock down shots. If he's comfortable heading into the fourth or in the clutch time, we at least have another relief valve if KD's the one getting doubled. Or if Shingun does draw help, there's another shooter, there's someone else that is comfortable taking shots and making shots. You have that baked in. The Amin bit has been an oscillation of, I have the ball, I get to make these on-ball reads, and I am just going to be in the dunker spot only and not going to do anything. And I think that naturally makes it a little bit more difficult late in games from a spacing perspective. He can't always get those kind of lurking opportunities. Go ahead.
Oh, well, let's take a 20-second timeout. Let's go back to your defense point, right?
Okay.
Is it their defense slipping or the importance of what their defense is to their success? That's what my brain wraps around. And what do you do with the balance there? You go back to that Knicks game, right? And they had Reed Shepard, they had Alperen Şengün on the court at the same time in the fourth quarter. And they put Şengün, I believe, on OG Anunoby, which kind of opened OG up as a roller. And like the Rockets were trying to pre-switch anytime they wanted to put Şengün in pick and roll. And the Knicks were just sending every single person to go screen to make sure it was Şengün in action with Shepard kind of having to navigate. And so you put yourself in a position where, okay, do we trust Alpi in these moments? Do we trust Shepard in these moments? Do we trust them together? How do we feel about those two defending pick and roll? And then what happens when they try and attack a matchup one-on-one? And so that can kind of take one of them off the board to a degree, right? I was watching that Rockets-Knicks game. I was like, ooh, this isn't going great. Knicks are trying to attack them both. This is ugly. I feel like there's going to be a sub. And the sub was Şengün. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. How do we balance out now? Do we just go small to a degree and decide we're going to switch everything? Okay, if we go small, what do we run? Amin's had the ball more than he's been a screener this year. They're probably going to put a big on Tari Eason or Dorian Finney-Smith. Who's the screener? What's the spacing? They get themselves into kind of a little bit of a different mix. And I think they have to navigate that. And I think that's an interesting point. So I think the defense, especially in the clutch, becomes more bucket getting time, right? Jalen Brunson didn't care about many people that were in a black uniform in that game. He just said, whatever, switch, cool. I'm just going to go ahead and get a basket. Is that bad defense or is this just time for the great players to play well? And how much do you balance? Okay. When we're in these moments, can we go get a bucket? You know, because we got KD, but who else can go get a bucket in these scenarios? And what do we go to? And that's where it gets interesting. To the Amin point, it's a learning experience for him. So I think he's just has the ball in more scenarios than he did last year, to where you see the aggression forming in his head, like, no, I'm going to go make a play. And that's fine, but which play are you making? That play doesn't always have to be a basket. And it's not like he's like, lot lasered in and not a willing passer, because he is, but there are moments where he's like, nope, gotta make a play, turn the corner. You did your job, you can make this kick and you guys can play out of that, but ruthless aggression, gonna get to the basket, well, turnover or missed opportunity in the paint, and we haven't necessarily got what we want. So that's where it gets interesting for me, but that's probably what I bounce off of what you said with Houston.
No, I think that's fair. And I guess the question I would toss to you, as you mentioned some of the lineup things in that Knicks game in particular, do you feel like Houston has a handle on what their closing five is or what their ideal closing five is? I think
they're trying to figure out different combinations, honestly. I think, okay, who does Dorian Finney-Smith play well with? And we don't have Steven Adams. So, okay, double bigs kind of gone off the table. Do we go more small? Do we feel good with the switching? Does that enhance our defense? Can we run things offensively? And so I think they have a feel for the closing five. Like, I think you're going to see, I think four are locked in, right? KD, Alperen Şengün, Jabari Smith, and Amin Thompson are going to be out there. Now, do you know who that fifth is based on what you want to do? Or are you playing off what's happening? So is this going to be Tari Eason because we need defense? Is this going to be Reed Shepard because we need spacing? Like, is this an advantage for you, or are you reacting to the game? I think is where my brain is at. That's where, okay, you kind of need these moments to understand what enhances our team and what protects us against what could be our flaw, either defensively, depending on who you have on the floor, or offensively, depending on who you have on the floor. That's the area where I don't know if they've necessarily gotten that down. And I think that's important. Like, Houston, in theory, should have enough lineups to be able to navigate different series and face different matchups and be able to play defense, offense type beat. But, like, if you're in a scenario where you don't trust any of those, right? You get into the scenario, it's like, I don't trust the defense with this lineup. I don't trust the spacing with this lineup. That's where it can get really tricky for you. So that's what they kind of have to navigate. And I think that's one of the things we underrate when it comes to coaching, when it comes to playing and winning at this time of year. You're trying to figure out, okay, what can we live with on each end of the floor? What are we trying to accomplish? And I think sometimes for Houston, they're like, okay, well, we're not scoring. We need stops. So this lineup goes out there. That lineup doesn't get stops. Okay, we need to score. We're trying to score offensively. That lineup's not scoring. And so how do we balance that out? Because if we're going to put Reed Shepard out there and Alperen Şengün, cool, we need to get something out of pick and roll. We're getting stuff out of pick and roll. Defensively, they're trying to attack. We can live with that if we're scoring. We stop scoring. Now they're scoring. We're in a tough box. Okay, let's go small. Yeah. We don't have the same offensive punch, but okay, we can get ball to Kevin Durant. Amen can drive. We can do different things. We can live with the struggles offensively if we can defend. Oh, no, we're not defending. What do we do with that? That's the balance I think that Houston's trying to figure out. What do we live with?
Yeah, and like that's ultimately what I kind of wanted to get to, or that's kind of where I'm at. I don't know if they have like, this is what we want to do, and then when we need to counter, we get to X, Y, Z. Like I think of, you know, quickly to OKC. I think they know, okay, we can close with our starters. And if we want to go smaller or we feel better about going smaller, we could do that. There's no egos, et cetera. If we need a different wing instead of Lou Dort, okay, cool. We can go Aaron Wiggins or AJ Mitchell when he's healthy, et cetera, et cetera. But like they kind of had the base baked in. These are the five that we trust. We know what we're running on offense, if we make shots or not. We know what we're running, what we're getting to, what our spacing alignments are going to be. Defensively, we know what our coverages are going to be, what our rotation patterns are, et cetera, et cetera. With Houston, I feel like, at least kind of tracking how Ime has handled this at the very least, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it feels like Ime has like trust in 3.5 out of the five. And then from there, it's just kind of like, okay, well, Tari's hitting threes. He has knocked down threes at a high clip this year. But like, okay, cool. We need the defense. Tari can knock down corner threes. Cool. Reed Shepard is actually cooking today. I'll give him a little bit more leash. He can make plays of pick and roll. He can space for us, et cetera. We're trying to get Dorian into this. And like, I have not loved the Dorian Finney-Smith minutes so far this year. Like, this is obviously like gaining a rhythm after missing so much time. So like, there's grace to be had there. But like, you kind of want Dorian to be more of a firm option than he has been so far. And again, we have what, a month and a half, 2 months left of the regular season. Like there's clearly time for him to gain the rhythm, establish rhythm, and then you get kind of the two-way pop that you got him for. But as of right now, like that hasn't hit to the same degree. So like now it's like, okay, do we go with Dorian? Are we going with Reed? What exactly are we doing? And like, Amon's going to be out there. But again, like he's trying to figure out when to be aggressive versus when to make plays. In terms of how he's being used, like sometimes that's just transition attack that's going to be fed off the defense. And if the defense is getting stops, he's not getting those easy opportunities. If it's him in pick and roll, like what is he getting? Is he getting an under? Is this going to be a switch? If teams put a big on him, okay, what do the screening reps look like? Because conceptually, I like those. But what is opening up depending on like who else is on the floor with him? So like I think Houston is very much in a searching place right now. And I don't think that's inherently bad, but I think that's where you feel even more angst. Because as you said a little bit earlier, they've accelerated this thing by adding Kevin Durant. And I think we've been able to kind of poke holes at the overall offense, the clutch offense, the non-KD offense, different aspects of their offense all year long. You get to the trade deadline, you do literally nothing. And now we're here post All-Star break, and it's like, well, this still kind of stinks. What exactly are we doing here? I think that adds to the fan angst. Like, not only are we good, but we have very loud things we got to work through. The direction doesn't seem as consistent. If you're telling us we're all in because we got Kevin Durant, and we have multiple games where Ime doesn't trust Reed Shepard, throwing that example out there, okay, why didn't we add another guard then? Like, I think that all kind of flows into one another.
Well, so I'm curious to see the guard they have, Fred VanVleet, just got hurt.
He's just not there.
And so I feel like that's a big part of the vision that we kind of just underrate to a degree. And it's like, oh, we'll just replace him. It's like, okay, our defense is going to really care about whatever point guard you're going to say. Like, it's a tricky thing to deal with. Let's pivot real quick. Let's talk about the Denver Nuggets, because there seems to be more angst about the Denver Nuggets than I personally expected after the start they had. 31-15 on January 23rd, and then they lost to Detroit by two, lost to Oklahoma City by 10, lost to Detroit by 3, double overtime lost to the Knicks, lost to the Cavs by 2, lost at the Clippers by 1, and then lost to the Warriors by 11, and they are now sitting at the 4 seed. And this is where it gets really interesting, because when you think of the 4 teams we've listed, Denver was probably the team where it's like, oh, they're 3rd. You know, I probably put them in the top tier with San Antonio and OKC. They're now in a position where they're fighting in a different fight than they thought they would. And now if they're in that 5, that means you get, you know, a tough matchup in the first round, and then you have to deal with OKC in the second round. And this is where it gets very interesting, because I think when you think about a lot of teams, and I think Denver's been a very, very good team this year, and probably with Jokic missing the time that he missed, and them being able to win the games they won when we spent 4 years talking about the non-Jokic minutes, that's a pretty impressive feat. They've had 10 games with their original starting lineup. They're 8-2 with that starting lineup. We have not seen them have a complete group throughout this entire year. Aaron Gordon out. Peyton Watson elevated, and now he's out. Christian Brown was out, and he comes back. Cam Johnson comes back. They haven't been a full totality of themselves. When we've seen them, they've been great. That doesn't mean they're not flawed, but is this a massive issue with the Denver Nuggets, or is this just little things knocking on their door, is what my mind goes to, right? I think at least I could speak for myself, Denver has been willing to try different things defensively this season, right? Doesn't mean they're perfect. Doesn't mean they're going to be at the top. It just means that we can do enough to try and figure things out. I think we saw that even in the Golden State loss, right? Al Horford, by the way, and you guys have all these websites, and you guys have all these charts, you guys have all this data, and y'all always forget that post All-Star break, Al Horford's knees thaw out, and he starts cooking. And this man was pick and pop, making threes, and okay, Denver wants to go drop or two on the ball. It didn't work with Al Horford because he was pick and pop and doing things. Denver adjusts to, okay, let's mix in some switches, even with Jokic. And then let's keep Jokic in a drop and let's pre-rotate to the pop. And this is kind of a larger non-Denver portion, but what is an adjustment to people? What does an adjustment mean? Does an adjustment only count if a team wins? Does an adjustment only count if they stick with something? Because Denver tried a lot of different things defensively to try and figure this out because they were getting cooked. It felt like, oh, we've lost the nuance defensively. To where Jokic is now just automatically putting 2 on the ball. And now Golden State's just like, cool, Al, take like you're setting the screen, pods, take 1 dribble, let's go pick and pop. And it's like, okay, can't be that. So Denver goes to switches, they go to drop, they do the pre-rotation, they try different things. It's valuable to have things in the box to be able to navigate a playoff series. You're going to need that. You're going to get hit at some point, you know? A team is going to understand what you're not good at, and you're going to get hit. And so being able to kind of knock on the door and figure some things out, you know, they built the lead in the third quarter based on what they did defensively. I thought it was pretty impressive. Lost that in fourth, but you have to go through those moments. So are we concerned with Denver's lineups? Are we concerned with Jokic and Murray? Are we concerned with the clutch offense? Is the concern with the clutch offense just because we don't have an Aaron Gordon? And it's instead of being a pairing of 3, in which we are nails for years and years and years, and you have to deal with all these different actions, we're just going to trap Jamal Murray, and then we're just going to rotate to Jokic, and deal with it. How do we balance what Denver's done against some of these good teams during this stretch? Because I don't think it takes away from who they are, but I can understand that maybe there's some concern if you're a Nuggets fan.
Like, I think for me, the clutch offense thing feels very much, again, we're naturally dealing with smaller samples. The clutch offense very much feels to like the last thing you said. Like, we've gone to this elite trio that you can't do anything with and can only send a certain amount of resources to just a duo. Now, that duo still features the best player in the world in Nikola Jokic, so it's not like it's easy. But to your point, if we're just going to put 2 on Jamal Murray, pre-rotate somebody to Nikola Jokic in, hey, whoever that guy is in the corner, if they make 3s, we lose. If they don't, we crush the defensive glass. We get to run against a defense that just hasn't been that good this year to begin with. Or at the very least, the non-healthy version of the defense hasn't been that good. I think overall, that's probably where a lot of the angst is coming from. Where early on, it's like, hey, they can flirt around the top 10. Their base is strong. You have Jokic at the level. You can mix in some drop. David Edelman brings in more zone, something that we saw, you know, when he took over last year. Here's the scheme versatility. It's all hitting. And then on the other end, we are the best offense in basketball. And still, they are the best offense in basketball in terms of offensive rating. When the defense goes from, oh, this is good, to, okay, don't really love these moments, but it's fine enough because the offense is elite, to we are a bottom 10 defense in the league, and we have been for a while now. I think the top reason for that is the health, because when you're missing Peyton Watson, like, not only is he good in his own right, like, he is he's defending very specific types of dudes that can puncture the early portion of your defensive scheme if he's not available. You're missing Aaron Gordon, who can defend different types of dudes and also does important off-ball stuff and also helps you end possessions. And so, like, that's probably the biggest thing for me, but I do think if you follow, like, different, you know, watch the Nuggets first and foremost, but, like, even follow, like, Denver media folks and teams that follow them closely, it's not funny, but it's kind of funny tracking some of the tweets in the first quarter of Nuggets games where you can just kind of see outright, even if you're not watching the game yet, just like, oh, this is a bad Denver defensive effort game, huh? Because the tweets are flying in and nobody is happy about what this looks like in the first quarter.
Oh, we're so back. We're so back. Remember, every year I could tell you exactly what Denver was going to do based on the defensive effort I saw in that first 5 minutes. We've done this together. We know this.
Yeah.
What I would say about the defensive effort is they're in a different area, I think, where schematically we're going to try more things. But scheme is not everything defensively. And so they don't have a lot of margin for error for a lot of other things. So dribble penetration, when they get beat off the drive, their help is different. Their rotations are different. It does not help them. They're not as good when they just get beat off the bounce. I think when their transition defense is bad, that's been a trend for me, especially like going to the Golden State game, going to the Clipper game. When they're not scoring or they're turning the ball over and then their transition defense is just awful and teams are just getting easy looks at it, they have to take that off the board if they want to compete and get to where they want to get to ultimately in the playoffs. And then I think it's okay to be able to take away the primary options. But if you are a team that is now struggling with late clock, where it's like 18 seconds of good defense, then we get beat or we get a breakdown, we give up a cut. Like, those are the things where we understand our margin for error. We can't live with that in the way that we could possibly do certain things. They have to take certain things off the board to protect themselves against who they are defensively. You know what I mean? I think that's where it's like, okay, you got to play hard and understand the assignment and the mission and do those things. And I think we've seen that. Like, they're still possessions. Even if you go to that Golden State game where they're switching, they're rotating, they're talking, they're communicating, not a perfect world, but they give the effort. They've got to understand that's who we have to be. Like, we can't forget that that's what we have to do to get to the max level. We can give the effort and get a C+ and get through the class and still get a 3.2 GPA. But if we don't give that effort, we didn't study for the test, and now we're failing this class, guess what? We're having a tough time at home when that progress report comes. And I think that's what they're dealing with, you know?
Yeah, like, I think it's tough. Like, I don't think, to your margin for error point, like, they can't afford to be that. Like, be the 17th best defense in the NBA while they're missing Gordon and now Watson. It isn't good, but it gives you a little wiggle room. Because then you can get late in games. And again, like, have I liked what I've seen with the clutch offense over the last 4 or 5 games? Like, I haven't. Do I think that is the Denver Nuggets when I have darn near a decade of evidence to the contrary? Like, no, I don't. I am not worried about Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic late game. Like, one of the thoughts that I had watching the end of the Warriors game in particular, because something that I've loved with Denver, like, you get Jokic and Murray in the middle of the floor, they go with their flat spacing look. It's like, okay, cool, what do we do? It was kind of funny seeing Denver deal with traps in that alignment. It's like, oh, well, if there's nobody on the wing, there's no relief pass for Jamal Murray. And so if the trap hits hard enough and you already have the pre-rotation of Jokic behind that, it's like you're kind of limiting the decision-making pool for Jamal Murray.
I'm going to raise my hand. I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to talk to Denver Nuggets fans. There's a reason those wings are empty. Because the pressure of Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic is tough to deal with. So you don't want to now fill the wing and allow someone to show help and take away a Jokic pop or slip or roll. And now, if they don't care about the people that are spaced, keep them as far away as possible. Open the space up for Murray to operate, Jokic to get in the space, make another rotation, and now you make a play, you keep pressure on teams. Do not now try and fill the wings or bring players higher on the court because you were just inviting an easier way for teams to show help. You're encouraging a blitz. I thought for me, it was just uncharacteristic Jamal Murray performance in the sense that he didn't have a handle on, they're trapping me, let me set this up, let me explore these wings that are empty and drag this out and now make the rotation and make the right reads. Is very much mm-hmm. very quick, one dribble pull. Jokic trying to set up a rescreen. Oh, I've already taken my one dribble. I'm not exploring the space. Now I'm trapped and now I'm in trouble. Like it was uncharacteristic from Jamal Murray more than Denver has to change their spacing. You start bringing people higher on the floor, buddy. I'm fantastic. I love this. Trap him, rotation, make this guy make a play. You don't want to live there. I promise you that.
No, that's fair. And to be clear, like, I'm not suggesting they need to change this alignment. It was just something that popped, like there was a turnover near the 4-minute mark to what you said, where they kind of go flat. Jamal Murray tries to come off the screen, doesn't have it, turns back to his left, and then there's just a warrior in his face. It's like, oh, snap. Let me see if I can thread the needle on this pass. Two people are on Jokic by the time the pass is thrown. It's pick six, Brandon Podziemski going the other way. And it's like, okay, that's not ideal. That's more so just, hey, this is what the execution can look like when it's not there versus this is a problem. Teams have figured something out. Denver needs to tweak something. So I want to make sure I'm clear on that front. But again, my overarching point hasn't looked great. I think they're going to be fine. Like they have just been too good for too long. As you said in your bit there, like that was an uncharacteristic version of Jamal Murray late in that game. And this was also happening. We talk about the fourth quarter, that Warriors game in particular. The Warriors went on what, like a 21-2 run in that fourth quarter? Like, those aren't the things that generally happen. Even in the Nuggets losses, like, that kind of thing isn't happening to that degree. Like, that's more Warriors kudos than, oh, Denver, you really have a problem now. But they do have to tighten the screws a little bit. I want them to get healthier. I think that's going to help. I think as Cam Johnson gets more comfortable within the offense, if you're looking for, like, a third while Aaron Gordon is getting, you know, getting back healthy, and while Peyton Watson is out, like you would like to see a more consistently aggressive Cam Johnson shooting well, but like I would like to see the volume go up. But I'm not super worried about Denver. The defense does just kind of have to hit a certain level, though. Like that's where my angst would be more so than the clutch offense. And we are back with this episode of The Dunker Spot. Steve, let's stick with the West. Let's stick with this group of teams. Let's talk a little bit about the Los Angeles Lakers, who, as of recording, Steve, 34-22. Per Clean the Glass, they are 11th in offense. They're 22nd in defense. They're 17th in net rating, a negative net differential, despite being a playoff team in the West right now. Which, funny enough, we're coming off of talking about Denver and what they're doing in the clutch. The Lakers have been a pretty darn good clutch team this season. They get the close wins, they eke them out. Where are you at with the Los Angeles Lakers? Is this like a dark horse contender hiding in plain sight? Is this a deadly flawed team that has a very hard cap ceiling? Like, where are you at with them right now?
I think they are still a team you don't necessarily want to see in the playoffs. They have pretty clear things they have to work through flaw-wise when it comes to the defense. Mainly, I would say it's easy to say, oh, they can't guard. They won't be able to win. Let's leave them where they're at. You still have to deal with Luka Doncic, LeBron James, and Austin Reeves. And we haven't seen exactly how well that trio and how much pressure that trio put on you. I think the Boston game was a reminder that it may not just be the defense portion, right? Like, no one remembers the Lakers came out with effort, started that game, but Celtics didn't score for like the first 2 minutes almost, right? What happens when they can't put pressure on teams offensively? That's where I think the balance becomes interesting, because now if we're talking about Luka Doncic, we've talked about he can hit every scheme. He can get you in rotation. He can make every play. He makes tough baskets. LeBron James is LeBron James. And we've seen the moments where, okay, Luka's in action with DeAndre in empty side. You now have to make a decision. How are you guarding Luka? How are you guarding the role? And then guess what? The two people on the strong side are LeBron James and Austin Reeves. And so we've seen these moments where LeBron James is able to attack a rotating and tilted defense. Austin Reeves is able to attack a rotating and tilted defense. Austin Reeves has grown on ball and pick and roll. So we've seen offensive growth. When a team is able to switch or pressure Luka or get the Lakers late in the clock or not send two on the ball and stay at home, and that offense goes from A-plus to A to B, how much does that impact them on top of, okay, we are a certain type of team defensively, right? We are a team that, okay, if we're going to switch, we're going to switch. We got to keep the ball in front. We show help. We recover. We know what they are on that end. And when they're willing to give up, that's great. But when they are not scoring and then they get hit in transition and they get hit in the half court defensively, is that the fatal flaw? Not just that they're not the A-plus defensive team. Is it the fact that our offense could go a little left just enough to where we're in a tough spot, and then we don't have enough of the defense to make this work on top of what we're going through? Is that the true issue? Is it the amount of lineups they have? Like, I'm trying to go more than just kind of knocking on the door and be like, well, they can't guard anybody and they're going to put Luka in action. They stink. I feel like that's not respectful enough to this team or the sport, right? Is it the combination that's truly the worst thing for them?
To directly answer your question, I think so. Like, I think it was kind of the inverse of Denver. Like, the offense just kind of has to hit a certain level for them. Because I think baked into what their overall personnel is, outside of like two, maybe three lineups, is like, this isn't going to be a top tier group. I think that's where you have seen, you go to the Clippers game, and as you've said many times on this podcast, Steve, J.J. Redick does not want to put two on the ball. You know what he did pretty much that entire basketball game against Kawhi Leonard? He put two on the ball. He was not going to let Kawhi Leonard get comfortable. Something that J.J. sprinkled in a little bit of last year and is doing to a much higher degree this year. We're going to toss in zone defense. You are not far removed from having an awesome breakdown on this podcast and even doing so on your timeline as well about how their zone defense looks. And so, like, they are searching for answers on that front to hit a certain level. But that is also predicated on the offense being super elite. When you have Luka Doncic, who is one of the best basketball players to ever live, LeBron James, who is one of the best basketball players to have ever lived overall, but like offensively, he's a supercomputer. Austin Reeves, who is now back and adds much needed rim pressure to their offense. You should just be able to bake stuff in. Even going back to that Clippers game, one of the early possessions that I clipped from that game when I watched it the day after was Marcus Smart, top of the key, initiating. DeAndre Ayton setting the screen for Luka Doncic on the left side of the floor. LeBron James on the right wing. Austin Reeves on the right, in the right corner. Luka Doncic comes off the Ayton screen, gets two on the ball, kicked Austin Reeves' three-point basket. It's like, ooh, you can't really help the way you want to when you have all those guys on the floor together. That can get incredibly difficult for you. And so, like, that's the kind of strain that they can put on you. But as we've talked about earlier in the year, sometimes you have the weird tempo stuff with the Lakers offense, where you've seen, especially early in the year, teams like, hey, what if we just ramp up our full court pressure against them? Let's make them bleed even more clock. And so a team that already plays a little bit slower than you would like in the half court, we're now starting our actions with 16 on the clock. And they get into some fun, elaborate stuff in the half court, to be clear. But if you're starting that with 16, 17 on the clock, we're being physical with Luka as he waits to initiate, or we're being physical with Austin Reeves as he waits to initiate. Okay, we give ourselves more of a chance to blow this up. And if that doesn't work, it is now defaulting to the Luka Doncic song and dance, which he has been incredible as a scorer this year. He has been incredible in isolation. That gets into some of my like shot profile stuff with the Lakers. Like, huh, this is a whole lot of mid-range stuff. I would like for them to get to the rim a little bit more than they do. You get into the LeBron James ISOs, which kind of made me sad. Like, look at some of the, go ahead. I saw that.
Well, I was going to very quietly ask who's getting to the rim outside of Austin Reeves, based on how teams are guarding them with switching and drops and all that. But secondarily, you just said it making you kind of sad, and you're going to pivot from there. So I'm going to sit and listen. We can go. You just take me out. Take me out. Audio and the visual. Well, go ahead, Nikias. Good, buddy.
Well, to finish that thought, to be clear, I'll say like some of the recent reps were making me sad because it was very jumper heavy. Like, I'm just used to, like, younger LeBron. Oh, I have gotten a big on a switch, or I've gotten a smaller player on a switch. I am getting all the way to the rim. You have to send two, maybe three to me, and that's opening something else up. And teams have been more willing to live with, okay, let's see if LeBron scores over the top. Let's see if he knocks down a jumper. That's all I meant on that front. So nothing super
egregious. Hey, look. One day we're going to get you to respect the changeup that is the mid-range jump shot. Maybe it comes in 2035. I'm not sure. But at some point, we'll get you to understand that that mid-range jump shot does now loosen up the defense in theory to, let me get you off balance, get a drive going, which is important as you age as a basketball player. I don't necessarily have the 98 miles per hour fastball every single time. So I kind of got to get you to think a little bit, get you off balance, make this jump shot. Now I turn the corner type beat, but I digress.
No, I understand, and I respect that. That was just a very quick note of just watching some Laker offense thing. My general point is that how consistently the Lakers put pressure on teams offensively, like, that bar has been a little bit lower than I anticipated this year overall. And I don't think, in light of what their defensive personnel is, even with the different looks they're throwing out, I don't think they can afford for that bar to lower. Like, this just firmly needs to be a top six offense, period. And so, like, the fact that I said a little bit earlier, I think it's 192 total minutes of LeBron, Luka, and Austin Reeves on the floor together. That is not enough. They are losing those minutes. And in those minutes, the offense hasn't been, it hasn't been insane. It's a 118.8. It's very good, but it's not, you're not hitting the 120s like Denver or Boston or something like that. And so, like, you just want to give yourself more room. And I think the offense is where they're going to get more room.
Well, I think it's a two-prong thing, right? Like, obviously, we need to see more time with those three together fully. But how many teams are just going to send help or be willing to show help? And what does that do? So if you're going to go to a LeBron or a Luka post-up, right? How long does it take for you to get to it? Are teams staying at home? Are they sending help? Are you making them pay? How many buckets do you have to get to make them pay? If it's Austin Reeves and pick and roll, is it just drop for Austin Reeves? How many shots does he have to make? When you do get stops, are you turning those into points? Like, I feel like there are things with the Lakers that kind of layer themselves into each other to a degree to where you can kind of see, okay, now they're playing too slow. Luka is now getting a pick and roll switch post up. No one's helping. Okay, he's got to make a shot. LeBron is now getting a cross screen into a post up. Okay, are you showing help? We're not showing help. We're showing late help. Like, there are different things, especially as different teams can kind of attack them in different ways. Like, I think Boston showed multiple things they wanted to do, right? We're going to switch. We're going to go drop. Hey, LeBron, nice post up. Here's Vucevic helping. Like, we're poking at you a little bit, but we're not necessarily getting an automatic. And that's part of Boston's MO, which I think, if you give Joe Mazzulla credit, I'm going to try and bother you and take things away, but I'm not going to tell you what I'm doing every single time, right? It might not be full court pressure on Luka, and then we might do it. And now you get to your elbow action with 12 on the clock, and that flare becomes, okay, I'm navigating, there's help, you got to make a play. That puts the Lakers in a tough spot, because when the Lakers know exactly what you're going to do, I think they are always having an advantage because they're talented. They have too many talented players with Luka, LeBron, and Austin Reeves who can put pressure on you. When you can kind of poke at them a little bit and say, oh, staying at home, oh, might show help. Toss showing help on your drive late. That's when you can really poke at the Lakers offense, especially when they try and figure out the different lineups, right? It's not always going to be all three of those guys on the floor, which in theory could be and should be an advantage for them. But at the same time, yeah, it's great you have an engine. Are we treating this person like they're an engine when they're on the court? You know what I mean? I think in theory, we're thinking, okay, Luka's always going to get two on the ball. LeBron's always going to get two on the ball. Austin Reeves is always going to get two on the ball. So they should always have someone on the court that generates an advantage. And if you're playing certain teams, it's like, well, not really. Switch. Stay home. Make a play. And they can, but how often will they is where we kind of find ourselves. And so that's where it's like, I understand the defense bit. I think the Lakers have tried enough things to just, like, we know who we are. We're not putting two on the ball, but we can switch. We can stay home. We can get mixed in unders. We can go late drop with DeAndre Ayton and just switch, stay home. Like, there are things they can do defensively to mask some of those issues, right? None of that matters if their offense is not A plus or at least A or at least pressure point adjacent, right? That will give you the wiggle room to where you can give the effort. And this is a team, I say this every year, a team that's not great defensively can elevate in the playoffs with a specific game plan. We're doing this specifically. We're sitting in the drives this way. We're putting two on the ball in these scenarios. Like, when you have a playoff game plan, your defense can elevate. And they have Luke Kennard now, so they should have some stronger lineups. They have enough versatility to where we can go small, we can go big. They can do different things to where I think they can elevate in the playoff series. They have to figure out how to keep that offense consistent enough to make any of this work, right? So before I can fill any of you Laker fans with fantasy land takes about what they can do in the playoffs, the offense, I have to be able to trust that they can be nails on that end. And that's my concern with the Lakers. I think I my whole base is, like, I think the defense thing is a safe space. I think it's a lazy take. I think it's an easy lazy take.
Oh, okay.
Oh, they can't guard. Da, 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 da. Yeah, that's cool. What else? What else are you talking about? What makes them good, right? Like, I don't. We get to this time of year, and I understand we get to the fatal flaw, and this team can't do this, so we're gonna push them to the side. And then you look up, and the Pacers are in the finals. You don't necessarily know why. Well, they're a really good offense, and they figured out enough defensively to put the position to make the offense matter more. That's what gets me excited about this time of year. If we're just going to say, oh, Lakers can't guard, da, 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 that's a waste to me. How are you going to enjoy the playoffs?
What happens if they do?
That's where my brain is always going to be at. You know what I mean? So I won't rant. I won't rave. But I had to get that off my chest.
No, I think that is fair. Like, a few things for me, just to bounce off what you said. One, I want to correct myself because I mentioned like a 118 offensive rating for the Lakers. That was their offensive rating with their new starting lineup with the big three plus Marcus Smart plus DeAndre Ayton. And so that would be around, like, I think seventh, somewhere in that range per clean the glass turns offensive rating. So, like, that around the level you want that offense to be. Defense has been.
Oh, really?
Indeed. So, like, hey, so that's where you want the offense to be. Defense still is bad. Now, what I wanted to hit on also, Steve, was you were talking about the way they kind of staggered their lineups, because this is something that I want to get into as well. This is something that we talked about earlier this year, where early on, like, we're still waiting on them to build a sample with the big three, but any combination of the two, if it was Luka plus LeBron, Luka plus Reeves, LeBron plus whatever, it's like, oh, they're winning those minutes. That's interesting. Can they figure out what these minutes look like with the big three? What they've kind of settled in on as they've gotten somewhat healthier with those three is you're going to have all three of them on the floor together. As of right now, they're losing those minutes. With a 112 offensive rating with those three on the floor, that is obviously not going to cut it to our bigger picture point. They flow into the Luka minutes without LeBron and Austin Reeves. It's a 122.2 offensive rating in those minutes, Steve. That's pretty darn good. The defensive rating, 121.5. Not where you want it to be, but they win those minutes because the offense is super elite. You get into the LeBron, you get into some LeBron and Luka minutes without Austin Reeves. About a 117 offensive rating. Good. Defensive rating still 121. So again, the defense kind of is what it is. You get into the LeBron and Reeves minutes without Luka. 116.5 offensive rating. That's solid, but that's not good enough. Defensive rating, 120.8. All that comes from PvP stats. So, like, if the defensive rating with those three is just going to be some similar to, like, 120, I'm sorry. Like, one, that isn't good enough. You want that to be lower. But within the broader picture of the conversation, the offense just kind of has to match that. And the fact that it's only being matched in the Luka plus bench minutes, it's a testament to how good Luka is, but it kind of has to come together for you to have more wiggle room. And thus, they, as you said at the top of this, Steve, the team nobody really wants to say, really wants to see. Because if they are able to game plan enough defensively, we'll switch, we'll show some of the aggressive gap help that we saw like last year. We'll toss in more zone. We'll put two on the ball if we need to, like we saw in the Clippers game. They could bake all this in against a single opponent. Let's say they get to a 118 day. Well, hey, if they're hovering around that 120 again, they're just winning those games. And now it's the Lakers making a run. Like, I think the pathway is there, but, like, they have to figure out what that three is. They have to figure out what their tempo is. They want to figure out how they want to poke it, the way the teams are helping and switching against them. Like, I think they can get there. And it was funny. That was the last thing I wanted to say. Brain was going all over the place. J.J. Redick was recently talking about, hey, some of our worst offensive games have come against teams that are playing deep drop against us. Like, it's on me to kind of figure out, like, how we can kind of poke at that. Some of the drop and some of the help behind that. So you nailed that. But yeah, like I'm with you. Like, I think the offense just has to hit a certain level because the defense kind of is what it is. Like, I hope that doesn't classify as lazy too, but like, this isn't a top five group. We know that. Is this offense going to be super elite? I think they can be. They just have to do that and be that more consistently. They have the top end talent for it.
My brother, I would never call any of your basketball analysis lazy. So just know that. You're good to go. I'm talking about Joe Schmo in California eating a burger with onions, right? Not you. Now, quickly pivot. Great show, by the way. Let's quickly pivot to the Minnesota Timberwolves, because I feel like you have been simmering, just making a fondue with your Minnesota Timberwolves take and trying to figure out, okay, when do I kind of present this? Have I perfected the recipe? And Minnesota has once again done the thing where they look awesome and then they look what? And I feel like that particular brand of basketball causes you to sit and put a blanket on and look at a wall and try and figure out what's going on. So where are you at with the Minnesota Timberwolves right now? Because they could beat anyone in the world. They could lose to anyone in the world. Anthony Edwards has been an insane person. The Prince uniforms are awesome. And then they just get blown out and dunked on by Tyrese Maxey. And it's like, well, what do we got?
I both love and hate that you know me as well as you do. Over multiple years of doing this podcast and Twitter and meeting during Summer League and all the things. Because, dog, if I am to be completely honest, Steve, among the four teams that we've talked about in the West so far, like, the Wolves are the team that I want to believe in the most out of the four. Like, I think Denver has earned the pedigree because they had the best player in the world, and they are, what, 2 years removed from winning a championship. So, like, they should have the top spot just by proxy, and they just pushed OKC to 7. But, like, Minnesota's the team I want to believe in because they have so much two-way talent led by Anthony Edwards, a coach that I really appreciate. They add Ayo Dosunmu to the bench. That should have been, like, the missing piece. We now have a stronger second unit. We have more of a wave to toss in when Ant isn't out there or when Randall isn't out there, because our offense is kind of falling off a cliff when either one of those dudes go to the bench. This should just be the team. And, like, I don't want to dismiss, one, the regular season is long and all these teams go through some kind of malaise. Some's a week, some's 3 weeks, but, like, every team hits a point where it's like, huh, this is interesting, can't wait for them to find it again type beat. So I don't want to dismiss that. I don't want to dismiss everything that has kind of happened in that area this year and how that could impact the team as well. But, like, it's every time I get ready to say, all right, Minnesota, you are, you know, thinking playoff context, you are the biggest threat to OKC. You can legitimately make not just another conference finals run, you can make a legitimate finals run. Then they come out flat, and Tyrese Maxey's dunking on everybody. And it's just like, dog, what is this? Or, if you want to rewind, every time I'm like, you know what? Minnesota just isn't serious enough for this. There are so many good teams in the West. OKC is this. Like, maybe they just aren't going to have this year. They're going to have some bigger answers, bigger, you know, maybe questions to answer in the offseason. Then they beat OKC. And it's like, well, yeah, they're missing people. But it's like, they could just do this. Their defense is stout, particularly when they have Rudy Gobert. Their defense has, once again, just been a mess whenever he goes to the bench. We're talking about what the fatal flaw for Minnesota is. It is just them trying to get stops when Rudy Gobert's not on the floor. Like, it has just been a massive gap. And they have tried going smaller and switching. They have tried, as you pointed out, Steve, somewhat recently, the zone that they can get into with Jaden McDaniels in the middle. It's not like they're not searching for answers on that front. And again, I think overall, Ayo Dosunmu should help with some of those units. But it's just like, I just want to be able to turn on a Wolves game, or I want to be able to tap into 10 Wolves games in a row and be like, you know what? This is what I'm going to get for them. Whether they win or not, this is what I'm going to expect to see from the Minnesota Timberwolves. And the fact that I can't get through more than three of those games without seeing, well, what the heck happened here? It is incredibly frustrating as an analyst, I must say. As someone that's just not a Wolves fan, it's just like, they're good. I enjoy them on the high end. They have this potential. I just want more than three games in a row where I'm just like, okay, yep, that's them. I just can't get that. That's where I am, Steve. Just kind of
now,
more annoyed than concerned.
This is where it gets interesting for you and I, because you have a deep question mark frustration with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and I take it back to a song from like 2017. If it's meant to be, it'll be. It'll be. Baby, just let it be. And the Minnesota Timberwolves, of these four teams, do they truly have a fatal flaw, is my question. Do they have the thing that does not work in the playoffs? Because you don't want to lean on they've made the conference finals back-to-back years, right? But they've made the conference finals for a reason. And so is this the one team that we know and can trust that not only will elevate in the playoffs, but can get it done in the playoffs? And so what is their flaw come playoff time? We have Anthony Edwards, who's going to A, draw attention, B, make the right reads, and C, get the scoring, right? We have Julius Randle, and we have Naz Reid, and we have Jaden Daniels is elevated. So we have players that have done a better job than we've seen in the past offensively. Do we have enough to where defensively we can focus in on these specific things? and we could push this done. If I were to tell you, do you believe Minnesota could beat every team in the Western Conference outside of Oklahoma City right now? Would you say yes?
Like, as of today or just in a vacuum?
In a vacuum. Let's go to the vacuum, because as of today, I'm pretty sure you're based on what you said, you would say no. But in a vacuum, you would say yes, right?
In a vacuum, yes. Yeah.
And this kind of ties into my larger point of trying to do this episode, because these are teams that have flaws, right? Like Minnesota, for some reason, they just decide we're not going to play defense. Offensively, we're going to slow down. We're not going to move the ball. They just get into this weird mode, and you know it when you see it, right? When we talk about Denver's defense goes left, Minnesota just looks left sometimes when we are watching them play. But when you look at these four teams, right, they are going to face each other. And this is where I kind of tie it all together, right? Can these teams bring the fatal flaw out of each other is where it gets interesting. What do the matchups look like? Like, you could say, hey, Denver's the best of the bunch, right? Do you think they just blow Minnesota out of the water? Probably not, right?
No.
You could say, hey, Houston Lakers, they're probably just going to be, you know, out of here. Lakers can't defend. Houston can't score. Okay, what if they face each other? One of them has to win. What do we do with that? You know, are the Lakers equipped to make Houston feel the same things? Are Houston equipped to kind of have their defense go on top of the Lakers? This is where it all kind of comes together for me, right? And this is why I kind of wanted to lay it out this way, because we can discuss these teams in a vacuum and we can discuss, hey, what's wrong with them? What are they doing? How are they struggling? They're going to play each other. Mm-hmm. And two of them are going to win. So if you look at it right now, and it wasn't even this weekend, it's Houston, Minnesota, it's Denver, the Lakers. The three seed feels like the golden ticket, and it felt like the golden ticket because the San Antonio Spurs have been on absolute demon time. I know you have Spurs thoughts. We can try and fit them in quickly before I get yelled at. But, like, that's where it gets interesting, right? Do you automatically think the Lakers can poke at Denver's flaws? Do you automatically think that Houston can poke at Minnesota's flaws? Like, they can all poke at each other in different ways. They can all put each other in different boxes. And that's going to be the fun of the first round. That's the fun of the playoffs. It's problem solving. And that's what this stretch means for these four teams. They've got to figure out how to get to their best in different scenarios because they're going to face each other. And two of them are going to have a chance to make a run at the conference finals. And that's the only thing I wanted to illustrate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, this should be a lot of fun. And that's where, as you mentioned, like, you talk about these teams, chef's kiss, you talk about these teams in the vacuum, but you also need to broaden the scope. It's like, okay, does their strength match this other team's weakness? Like, what does it look like? When it gets into literal game plan city, are they equipped to lock in and poke at specific things against these teams that can be matched up with? And so, like, I think that's where a lot of the fun can come in. I will say quickly on the Spurs point, like, they have separated. It was very funny, like, earlier in the year, it was just OKC and then literally everybody else, and then kind of crept into, like, huh, it's OKC plus Denver and San Antonio or Denver plus Houston or whatever. But, like, it's still a bit gap. Now it is just OKC is 2.5 games ahead of San Antonio. The Spurs have not lost in the month of February. Like, they lost that Charlotte game where Musa Diabate put Victor Wembanyama in a locker for, like, 30 minutes. They have had pretty easily the best offense in basketball. It's a near 126 offensive rating in the month of February per clean the glass. It is absolutely absurd what they've done. And they're still an elite defense, especially when Victor Wembanyama is available, which takes me to a couple of things. One, like, we know Wimby's absurd, but Wimby is really, really absurd defensively. Like, that Detroit game where he did not score well and it felt like he hit the floor like 47 times because of how physical they were with him for like the middle of the first quarter onward, it did not matter because Wimby was just like, oh, cool, that's Asar Thompson, until he maybe got benched. I don't know, we haven't got time to talk about that right now, but either way, oh, you're Asar Thompson on the floor, I'll just stay around the basket. Cool, Ron Holland's in the game, I'll just stay around the basket. Like, there were a couple of drives when Jalen Duren's like, yeah, I'm just gonna go through your chest because I'm stronger than you, but Wimby's still up for the challenge. We're just going to disrupt everything. We're taking away things from the rim. So, like, he is just insane. Incredibly disruptive defensively. If he's healthy enough, he's going to be top five in the MVP battle. He's probably going to win D-Boy. Stephon Castle, though, Steve. We did our Sun Spurs broadcast in the NBA app / League Pass if you want to watch that. You know, check out the strategy stream option. You can hear Steve and I talk about that game live. Go ahead and do that. Smile emoji. I asked you during the broadcast how you felt about the Stephon Castle all-defense candidacy. And you said in as many words, like, I think he has played his way into the conversation. Like, it is 10 overall. So, like, maybe when you list it out, he might not be in the 10, but at the very least, he deserves to be in the conversation. And I thought that was a fair way to put it. It was very nice for him, aside from the Spurs just winning that game and holding the Detroit Pistons to, I think, a 65.6 offensive rating in the half court, which was their worst performance all year long. Stephon Castle once again gets a tough assignment. And once again, made sure that the person he was guarding was not going to have a good time. He got the Cade Cunningham matchup, and he was all over the place in that matchup. Early physicality when Detroit was trying to set up their handoffs for Cade. They try to set some half-court screens for Cade. He's navigating those. He's into the body before those screens come. And anytime Cade came off a curl or off a screen, even if Stephon Castle gets hit, the recovery's there. I am contesting without fouling. It was just a masterful performance and a resume continuing to stack with impressive performances. Like, we're not too far removed from the Rockets game where he defended Kevin Durant and also Alperen Şengün. Like, you can put him on just about anyone. One, that is a luxury afforded when you have Victor Wembanyama behind you. But even on top of that, like, the screen navigation is there, like, the hand-eye coordination is there, like, he played the weak side and get deflections that way, like, he can just take the ball from you because of how quick and how strong his hands are as well. Like, there's some rim protection juice for him as well, on and off the ball. Like, this is a very firm all-defense candidate for me. And I think that's not easy to do in today's NBA. It's especially not easy to do as a second-year player. And something I was thinking about earlier was, like, not only do you have to be good enough to play yourself into these conversations, when we're just thinking about the overall voting base, you also have to have enough of a platform to be seen doing what you're doing defensively. And so the fact that he has been able to grab that all season long, but particularly in these marquee matchups, and it's been very loud. Stephon Castle is incredibly good at defense. It bodes well for him. So, like, I just wanted to salute him for what he's been doing and what the Spurs have been doing overall. Like, they have been monstrous.
They've been very good. They've been very good. And I think post All-Star break, you go to that Phoenix game, the effort that they made defensively, the composure they had offensively, it felt different. And then, you know, was able to watch them play Sacramento, and they got out to a big lead and then were able to figure themselves back out. Detroit, they established themselves early, get hit a little bit, and then get back to who they are. That's an important moment for a young team. And back to the Stephon Castle portion, I think he's had a real special season as far as growth goes. Offensively, when you look at his composure, when you look at his athleticism, but he never, ever feels sped up. The ability to get in the paint, the ability to attack and transition, the chemistry he has with Victor Wembanyama, I think he's been a real, real, real big portion of what the Spurs have done. He's got a pretty high ceiling because, like, imagine once the mid-range gets a little bit better or when the drive is a little bit stronger and he feels a little bit more consistent on that. De'Aaron Fox, the poise that he brings to this group, with his ability to understand, okay, I know what I need to do for this team, but you don't need me to do that every single possession. So I'm going to play with him when we do. Devin Vassell adding what he does to their attack and being able to be like, all right, that's fine. I'll space the floor. I'll back screen for Wembanyama. Julian Champagne, hey, what do you need me to do? Because guess what I'll do? I'll make threes and I'll play defense. And that's it. That's it. Like, they just know who they are. And I think watching that grow, especially post-All-Star break, because they got poked at a little bit going into the All-Star break. Teams were like, we're going to be physical with you. And Detroit wanted to be real physical with the Spurs. And Spurs had to take a couple, bumps. But, like, they're playing with a poise and composure you don't necessarily see from young teams. We saw it, I think, from OKC last year to where we know who we are. Maybe you don't believe that we can do this, but we know who we are. The Spurs have kind of elevated to that level, and that's where it gets real, real fun in the Western Conference, guys. Because we've got teams that are trying to figure out who they are or trying to figure out tough moments, and we have teams that know what they are. And those six teams are going to be in the playoffs. And we didn't even talk about the play-in. We didn't talk about Kawhi Leonard scorching the earth right now. We didn't talk about, well, unfortunately, the Suns lost. Devin Booker's out. Dylan Brooks is now out. But, like, we didn't talk about the Warriors. Hey, we're trying things without Stephen Curry. Like, the play-in's going to be a not a movie, but like a sitcom, right? But the playoffs are going to be a movie. So that's where we put a bottle on the cap, baby.
the play it's going to be a limited edition series. I respect it. All right, we will take a break. And when we return, it is time to talk about Unrivaled. The playoff field is set. Have some early thoughts there, talking about the weekend. And also, I get to reveal my MVP and other thoughts as I have an awards ballot this year. So please stay tuned. And we are back with this episode of The Dunker Spot. Steve, it is time to get unrivaled as we enter the last week of the regular season. We had games last night on Monday night. The regular season ends on Friday night. And then the playoffs start on Saturday. We'll have more playoff specific thoughts as the season gets set a little bit later. But the playoff field is set at the very least. The Phantom, as of recording, are your one seed. They have clinched the first round bye, which means their first playoff game will happen next Monday at Barclays Center. The Mist are your 2 seed at 9-4. The Laces are the 3 seed at 9-4 right now, but there could be some flip-flopping there depending on how Friday's action goes. The Breeze are the 4 seed. The Rose are the 5 seed. The Violet are the 6 seed. Those are your 6 playoff teams. The Hive and the Lunar Isles have officially been eliminated after this weekend of play. So there's your field of 6. Again, we'll have the seeding settled a little bit later in the week. But Steve, very entertaining slate of games. A lot of playoff stakes, naturally, to see who's clinching, what the seeding's going to look like, et cetera. My favorite game from the weekend, it had to be Rose Laces on Sunday. One of the best games that I have seen in Unrivaled all year long. Obvious stakes there. The Laces, again, were pushing for the 1 seed after losing to the Phantom on Friday. Still trying to make sure they're in the mix for that, or ultimately getting the top 2 seed and getting that first round bye. The Rose kind of fighting for their playoff lives, needed a win to clinch a playoff spot, and they did so off the back of another 30 ball for Chelsea Gray, 38 points in that matchup. And it was funny watching how that game started, where Chelsea hits 4, I think 5 threes in that first quarter. And this was with, okay, we're going to play a little bit at the level. We have Jackie Young defending her. She's mixing in some unders against Chelsea. Let's make sure they don't get to the rim. And Chelsea's like, nah, what if I just knock down all these pull-ups, actually? You're not going to have fun for me. And to see the immediate shift from Andrew Wade's like, you know what? No, we're not going to do that. This is something that we've done against the Phantom. This is something we've done against the Breeze. We're going to put 2 on the ball against Chelsea Gray for the rest of this basketball game. If she gets a screen, she is seeing an extra body. Alyssa Thomas is going to be rude at the point of screens. And like seeing them try to navigate that coverage is like you get 2 on the ball. Chelsea ends up with 5 turnovers in that game, 4 assists. So negative assist turnover ratio in that game for her. But anytime it's early transition attack or she just wants to go 1-on-1, it's like, well, I can still just score. And so this is where you get the ball screen efficiency felt like it dipped as the game went on. But literally anything else, Chelsea is just getting all of the buckets. It was just a vintage, not even vintage, just kind of like a typical performance of what we've seen for her on the high end and why she has been as good as she's been during Unrivaled this year, why she is very firmly in the MVP discussion as I think the fan votes were due yesterday. The media ballots are due later this afternoon. I have to submit my vote. Very appreciative of the opportunity to vote.
Hold on. Everyone, if you're watching, if you're listening, if you're driving, if you're sitting, whatever, clap it up for Nikias Duncan. Clap it up for Nikias Duncan. He has a vote. Let's go. Come on.
We heckin' did it. I appreciate you. But that does induce some headaches as I think about all this stuff and go through, like, what have I seen? What are the baseline numbers? Like, what are some of the lineup data and all the things? Like, we had some fun. We're going to get there.
The lineup data in three on... It's fine. Gross.
I want to have as much information as possible. You know, we're talking about ascribing value and things. You know, it's what I want to have a fuller.
The information's in your brain and your heart. But I will say, Laces Rose was a back and forth battle, and I think it gets interesting. Like, the Rose are a team that feels like they are built to kind of disrupt when it comes to the playoffs, just because of the versatility they have, especially with Angel Reese going back. And I loved Angel Reese's return, by the way. I think, you know, on top of what last year did, the defense that she's displayed, the effort that she's given, as far as I'm closing out, like, even in her return, they lost, right? the last possession, the game winner was on Angel Reese, but that was not on Angel Reese. Angel Reese was all over the place. I'm at the level, I'm switching, I'm covering, closing back out, I'm being active. And so, like, to be thrown right into that competitive environment, to be contributing defensively at that level was pretty impressive. And I think the offense will continue to grow. For me, right, I go back to Phantom Laces, the game that you didn't think would be much of a thing, was a thing. And let me tell you about these two teams, right? It's very fascinating because the Laces keep so much pressure on you. Like Brittany Sykes, Jackie Young can drive at any point. They can screen for each other. And then you have Alyssa Thomas who's involved. And so you don't ever know if it's going to be a handoff, it's going to be pick and roll. It keeps you in a real tough spot. They can get downhill real quick. And then the Phantom, it's not fun to guard Kelsey Plum and Aaliyah Boston pick and roll. It's just not ideal. You want to mix in a switch. That sounds great until Kelsey decides I'd like to shoot a three or I'd like to throw the ball to Boston. And you just have a tough time dealing with that. And so it's been fun to watch the Phantom kind of navigate. Okay, we're going to attack in certain ways that we can score consistently. We're going to keep scoring. The Mist are still the most fascinating team to me and unrivaled because they can do so many things. And then you have the nights where it's like, oh, none of you can score. You guys can't score. But on the nights where they can, and Arike is a demon, and Alicia Gray is a demon, and Stewie and Alana Smith are mixing in different lineups, and defensively it's real tough, that's a different team. I think those three teams are separated from themselves. I think what it comes down to playoff-wise is which of the bottom three sounds absurd, but like Breeze, Rose, Vinyl, who's set up to kind of put themselves in a position to kind of elevate? The Breeze have had a lot of good moments. It's been tough as the season's gone on, because teams are just like, hey, we know your bigs. Mm-hmm. Paige, you're doing great, but we know your bigs. Kate Martin, cool. Do what you got to do. We know your bigs. The Vinyl, right? The Vinyl, look. The Vinyl have just kind of climbed the ladder all year long. And Ray Burrell, y'all had a lot of words about Ray Burrell. And let me tell you, she has cooked this entire unrivaled season. And so some of y'all need to knock on the door, send an apology to Ray Burrell, because she has been at whatever you need. A drive, three, defense, I got you. So I'm very intrigued. Like, I think getting one of the top two seeds is very important, because it's going to be a fight in the first round.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm right there with you. To the Ray Burrell portion very quickly. Coming off of a career-high 30 points in the Vinyl win last night. Last seven games for Ray Burrell, Steve. 17.4 points, four rebounds, two assists, about a steal and a half, shooting 38% from three on four attempts. And this is with her mixing it up on the offensive glass. The drives have hit. She's gotten to the line quite a bit, particularly over the last three or four games. To where, like, even if she doesn't score, like, she is just so persistent getting to the basket. Like, this is legit 6-1, 6-2 getting downhill for you. You stop, you force a miss, and then her second jump is faster than your first. Oh, don't do this to me. But it's like, she misses, her second jump is faster than your first one. So, like, she gets her own rebound, puts it up, gets fouled. It's like, well, darn, we worked so hard to try to keep her off her spot. She got there anyway, in addition to what she does defensively. You can defend multiple types. And so I wanted to salute Ray Burrell for what the season has been, and particularly like what the last couple of weeks have been for her, because she has been huge. But as you kind of lay out, like, again, you have the top three of these playoff teams, you have the bottom three in terms of the standings. It is very funny that the bottom, like, literally your championship matchup from last season, and then the Breeze with Paige Beckers. It's just like, you're not going to have a easy time. Like, getting one of those first round buys is very important, because, like, you mess around enter Saturday. Oh, cool. We had a really good season. We didn't have a better season than one of these other two teams. I now have to face the Vinyl in their defense. What if Ryan Howard hits seven threes? What if De'Erica Hamby, who has dropped 40 this year because of her roles and her steals and her drives, like, what if De'Erica Hamby just has her one? Like, you just don't know what it's going to look like. We didn't get to see Saniya Rivers in the game last night, but, like, if Saniya's there, like, that's another defender that the Vinyl can toss out there. Like, do we want to be in that dogfight in a first-round matchup? Like, not really. Oh, cool. We didn't get the first-round bye. We may have to face the Rose, who won the championship last year with Chelsea Gray having an MVP-caliber year and is coming off of a 38-point performance. And now Angel Reese is back. And I'm glad you kind of circled into the overall view of the Angel return, because that was going to be one of the first questions I asked you. Like, how have you felt about the early return so far? Like, we know she can be, but this is new. She mentioned post-game, like, hey, I haven't played basketball in like 5 months. And I was like, well, that's kind of insane that, because she's been doing literally everything else, and like, salute to Angel for it. It's wild to have that much motion that early in a career. And I say that complimentary, to be abundantly clear. Like, she is literally everywhere. And so for her to like have all this going on, it's like, yeah, fine. After all these teams are hounding me to come back, I'll come back, and then immediately put on the defensive masterclass in my second game back.
That's what she does.
Just kind of speaks to like, it is what she
does. It's who she is. There are no broke boys, no new friends. She gets it done every single time. What I will ask you, I will ask you very quickly, where are you at with your MVP vote? Won't pry too much. We'll make you release the full ballot, because I know it's still stir-frying in the brain. But who's getting the motion for you for MVP?
Oh boy, it is still stir frying as we record on a Tuesday morning. Again, the ballots are officially due, I think, 5 p.m. Eastern. So I have a few hours to like solidify things. I will give you like the early thought process for me, Steve. And so, as I like to do, I have the wider list and then I kind of whittle it down. And so I kind of had, I think, 7 names heading in. 7 or 8 names heading in. And so I was thinking of, you know, one of Aaliyah Boston and Kelsey Plum. So that's 2. One of Breonna Stewart, Alicia Gray, that's 4. You have Chelsea Gray. You have Paige Beckers. You have Brittany Sykes, who I think, if she's not the best Laces player in a vacuum, I think she has been their best / most consistent player this year, at the very least. I think if the Laces have an MVP rep, I think it's Brittany Sykes. So I was like, okay, so this is kind of the group that I'm deciding between right now. Like, y'all are in, you'll have been very good and your team's in the playoffs. So, like, all due respect to Aaliyah Edwards, who's also had an incredible season. Like, you got to eliminate her, I'm sorry. And then it's like, okay, well, I do have my ground rule. Like, I'm not about to have 2 players from the same team in the MVP discussion, because if that's the case, then, like, are you, you know, most valuable player in the league when there's debate about you being the most valuable player on your team? Like, I do need to have a firm answer who I think it is. And so I ended up thinking long and hard about Stewie versus Alicia Gray. Who was going to be my rep there if I was going to, and then from there, like, are they going to actually win the award for me? I landed on Stewie over Alicia Gray. Very slightly, which is hard because I tweeted out earlier this year, like, hey, I think Alicia Gray is kind of the MVP right now with the way the drives have hit, 3-point shooting has hit. She's been very good defensively, et cetera. I do think what Stewie unlocked defensively for them, we have more time to get into it. But either way, she ended up getting the edge for me as like the missed rep. Then I was between Aaliyah Boston and Kelsey Plum. And I was like, what do I do with this? Because Kelsey has been incredibly good. Aaliyah has been incredibly good. I think Aaliyah's ability to hang in space defensively, in addition to the rim protection stuff, helps unlock the 2 big lineups. Kelsey Plum, how good of a scorer she is and how often she has gotten 2 on the ball this year in pick and roll, has helped unlock the bigs, including Aaliyah Boston. So I'm just going back and forth between, like, okay, who's going to be the rep? I can make an argument for Kelsey, can make an argument for Aaliyah. I don't know what to do. Ended up with Aaliyah. And you got Kelsey Plum. And it's like, okay, so I have this rep. And then we get into the Chelsea Gray portion of the program. And as I have displayed I've been impressed with the Rose early on. And then I had a lot of angst about the Rose very early on. Because, like, hey, they're asking Chelsea to do a whole lot. What is this defense going to be, et cetera, et cetera. And then you just have this Chelsea Gray season where she leads unrivaled in scoring. She leads unrivaled in assists. It's 53 on twos, 48 on threes, 92 from the line for her. Steve, there were 4 games this season. This is that I wanted to get to, kind of tease before we start recording. There were 4 games this season in which Chelsea Gray did not score at least 20 points. Not only did the Rose lose all 4 of those games, which speaks to, again, how important it is for her to play well for them to have a chance. They lost by 2 points. That was the most recent game against the Hive on Friday. They lost by 26. They lost by 25. They lost by 18. In general, the Chelsea does not score 20. Not only do they lose, they get blasted in those games. Now, again, bigger picture problems about like what the defense has been in those games, so I don't want to make that just super simplistic. Chelsea does not score, they lose. But like that does give you kind of a signal of like how valuable she is. And so like I'm kind of weighing like how good she is, how important she's been versus like, well, they are just kind of under 500 or flirting around there while you do have other better teams that are also having really good seasons. So like my top three are between Aaliyah, Breonna Stewart, and Chelsea Gray. And I'm still trying to decide. Like,
so who's the, who's the pick?
No. What? Stay within yourself. It's okay. So I agree with your list. Kind of. I think that it gets interesting because of some of the records. I think Chelsea Gray would absolutely deserve consideration for this. I think Paige would probably be the Breeze rep, but I don't know if the Breeze should have a rep based on the end of their season. I believe that Brittany Sykes should be the Laces rep because of the importance that she brings to the table and the consistency she's had on both ends of the floor and on Rival. Stewie against Alicia Gray is a very funny thing. I had a feeling in the back of my brain you would flip to Stewie because, oh, wow, the defense, and she scores. It happens almost every time with the Stewie MVP in campaign. We can talk about that later. With the Phantom, I think that while Aaliyah Boston while Aaliyah Boston has had a tremendous year, I think that Kelsey Plum's moxie and consistent scoring has been underrated. Kelsey Plum has brought it every single night. And this goes through a spell when teams were like, well, Kelsey, do you want to defend? And it got a little interesting for like 2 weeks. And then Kelsey was like, actually, I'm fine. And I'm going to keep getting buckets and I'm going to keep making plays. So for me, if you look at how the Phantom has rose over the course of the season, if you look at what Kelsey Plum has done every single night, the hashtag is MB Plum. And I think Kelsey Plum has been the MVP of Unrivaled. So I'll put that there. I don't have a vote, and that's okay. Yeah. But the hashtag is MB Plum. Book it. Write it down. Permanent marker. Sharpie.
Book it. Okay. In Sharpie. I love that. I love that you finally get one of these in earnest. It is also funny that we are back to MV Plum while playing with the big that may be better. Do we have to suss through that again? But that's just long-term dunker spot lore. That's all that is, folks. For the people that are tuning in, that's new. as far as I'm kind of leaning towards Aaliyah right now, to be honest with you. Like, I think record plus 20 and 10, over three stocks, 62 on twos, 35% on threes, 80 from the line. I think she's either first or second in terms of, like, total plus minus. Like, they're blitzing one of those minutes with her on the floor. Again, I think her versatility in the front court helps unlock some of the two big lineups where they have crushed teams in those alignments. And so, like, I'm kind of leaning towards Aaliyah right now. But again, like, I'm probably going to do, like, probably sounds very cliche on the podcast, but, like, in a literal sense, I'm probably taking this down to the wire to look at some more stuff, to ask, to reach out to some folks in the league, kind of bounce ideas off, want to make sure I feel good about things. So, like, I'm kind of leaning Aaliyah one right now. I think she has a strong case. Like, I think the Kelsey case is also strong. So, like, I do not begrudge you for that. All jokes aside, like, I think if she ends up winning the award, like, I'm not really going to be, I wouldn't have a reason to be upset about it anyway. But I do think she has a strong candidacy. And if you feel like she's the rep, like, you could absolutely make that case pretty easily. The scoring, the playmaking, to your point, holding up defensively after that stretch.
Very good.
Very important. So
awesome.
That's where we're excellent. At.
Great stuff. Get us out of here. Hit the horns. And folks, I did my job. We did a great podcast, and I didn't have to talk about Killian Hayes. Let's go. No. Hit the horns and take us out of here. Get us out of here.
Producers, hit the outro.
For
listening to and watching this episode of The Dunker Spot, please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you haven't already. You can catch me on socials at TheKaiusNBA. You can catch Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.